This is Radio MD COVID-19 Weekly, your source for COVID-19 news from the front lines of healthcare. I'm your host, Caitlin White. We'll hear an interview later on how to keep busy during winter break and COVID-19. That's up after this news. 58% of Americans recently say they'll take a coronavirus vaccine. That's up from 50% in September. But a large number of Americans still don't want to take the vaccine, according to the new Gallup polls. The poll was conducted October 9th through November 1st before the two big pharmaceutical companies made promising announcements that vaccines in clinical trials showed effectiveness. The recent increase is primarily due to a jump in willingness among Democrats. However, Americans overall are still less likely than they were earlier this year to say they'd get a COVID-19 vaccine. 4 in 10 remain unwilling to get a vaccine, indicating public health officials face an uphill climb in convincing a good share of the public to do so. As coronavirus cases increase across the U.S., children have been increasingly testing positive as well. Doctors told NPR that they have seen a jump from earlier this year when they were only getting sporadic calls. Children represent about 11.5% of all reported coronavirus cases where a person's age is noted, according to the American Academy of Pediatrics and the Children's Hospital Association. Children usually do not have severe symptoms of COVID-19, and many have no symptoms, according to the CDC. And as if American healthcare couldn't get any worse, it's now going to be more difficult for COVID long haulers to get insurance next year. COVID-19 is now considered a pre-existing condition. Former COVID-19 patients could face a range of physical and mental effects, including lung damage, heart or neurological concerns, anxiety, and depression. Although some of these issues will dissipate with time, others may turn out to be long-standing problems. Some tips from NPR include making sure to select an ACA-qualified plan, shopping around to consider all of the ACA plans available in your region, and asking for help. The number of children who have tested positive for COVID-19 is expected to surpass 1 million very soon, which is scary for parents, especially as we plan school breaks and winter holidays. Dr. Allison Tothy sat down recently on our podcast, Healthy Children. She is a pediatric emergency medicine physician and a spokesperson for the AAP.
Can you give us some signs as parents that we should be looking for when our kids are really having trouble coping and when they're feeling so cooped up? And, you know, do you have any red flags for us?
Yeah, absolutely. Everyone knows their own kids. And when your kids aren't acting like your usual kids, dramatically different, I think that's a time to worry. Not all kids show their anxiety and their worries the same way. But everyone has a sense of what their kid is like. And when they deviate from that, they're really acting out. They're throwing tantrums. They are not going to sleep very well. Obviously, they're threatening to hurt themselves, or they're saying things like, I'm so sad, I'm so depressed, or they isolate themselves, even from social media. They totally close themselves off in the room. All of those things are worrisome signs. It's really looking for the trends of what your child has been and now is drastically different, or is a 180 or even a 120 from their usual behaviors. That's not to say that most of our kids, at least especially if they're teens, are spending more time on their own in their rooms. But the reality is that if it were a normal non-COVID era, they'd be spending time without us anyway as parents. They'd be spending time with their friends. So naturally, they should be spending time socially, whether it's online, right, or outside, far away from them, or by the phone, whatever that is, with their friends. It's when they're kind of cutting off all those social connections that we should start to get worried.
That's a really good point, and thank you for that. So I'm an exercise physiologist, Dr. Tothy. You'd think I could get my own kids to be physically active. And yet, there I see hiding in their rooms again. It's an uphill battle, and they don't want to exercise. They're eating junk. I won't let my kids do bed school. Certainly my daughter. I caught her doing bed school. I'm like, what are you doing? She was in school on her Zoom, lying in bed. I'm like, that is definitely not happening, bed school. So how do we get them to motivate, to get some physical activity when, like you say, the weather could be iffy, they're not going around with their friends as much? Yikes.
Yeah, I mean, we as parents probably call it bribes. Me as a pediatrician like to call it incentives, right? So let's use the word incentives. But I do think there is some value, depending on the age of the kid, in incentivizing your child to get up off the couch and do a little bit of exercise. Perhaps they know that the holidays are coming and there might be a gift involved that they really want, or there's some special activity that they want to do that might motivate them. I mean, you clearly have to pick your battles. Those of us, you know, not just with teens, but children, understand the idea of picking battles. But this is a big one, and it's important, and it helps with their emotional state. It helps with their physical state. It's about keeping their heart healthy. So exercise is a really big one. What I've tried to tell some parents is maybe you have to exercise with your kids. Maybe it's a time when you all go for a walk, or you get on the bike and you bike with them, or you create some sort of friendly competition. If you have the ability, there's, you know, a lot of virtual 5Ks. Maybe you all join a 5K for a good cause and the t-shirt that comes with it. There's a lot of ways to be creative, but I think this is one where it is worth the battle. It's just a really hard battle sometimes.
Have you ever taken a kitten for a walk outside? They try and run back
inside.
No, I know.
Right?
This is me picturing trying
to get
my
dog. They look at you like crazy the entire time.
Out to the walk.
Yeah.
No kidding.
I know. This is really where the incentive, I think there's some incentive to it. And maybe it's their friends all running a 5K together or something. And it doesn't even have to be as elaborate as that, but
it's a great idea, though.
You know, and some kids are better at it than others. There's not a perfect answer, but there are some things that are worth, you know, that. So tell me what it would be worth to you to get you to blah blah blah, right? To get you to get up and exercise 3 times a week. And get your heart going. Those are really important questions. And I also think that this is an opportunity to start to nudge them into lifelong habits, because, you know, most kids aren't going to be professional football players, and most kids aren't going to be professional baseball players or professional swimmers, but they are going to have to figure out how to stay healthy the rest of their lives as they work their jobs, as they move on through life. And learning some of those skills now, while they're certainly hard won on the parent side, is worth it.
That's really great advice and good language for parents to hear to incentivize that. And I am a queen bee nudge, so that works out well for me. Now, another thing that we're seeing with our kids is, you know, this whole lack of sleep, this whole change of schedule. They stay up until 2 o'clock in the morning and then they want to sleep in, or they roll out of bed and then jump on their Zoom. Sleep is totally thrown off now. Whereas when they were getting up to get dressed and go to school, that was different. But now they feel like since they don't leave the house, they can stay up all night. How important is sleep and that routine?
Yeah, so this is one where I feel like I really am a stickler as a pediatrician. Sleep is really important. It is important for adults, but it's super important for kids and their growing brains and their growing bodies. There's a lot of really good data, a lot of really good research and literature on it. And teens need sleep as much as kids do. So this is really tricky. I like to encourage families to create routines. So the first foremost, which is hard for a lot of families, is you got to get your phones out of the rooms after a certain time of night, 9 o'clock, 8 o'clock, 10 o'clock, whatever you decide for your family. Everyone, including parents, need to set an example and get their phones out of the rooms. We are guilty of this as well, by the way, in our household often, but put a basket down on the first floor. Everyone charges their phones at night, whatever that looks like for your family. But teens are often staying up because they're on their phones. They don't silence them. They don't, their alarms that go off, their friends are getting in touch with each other. And that is what's keeping kids up. You know, most kids, if you told them go read a book at 10 o'clock at night, they're probably by 10:15 falling sound asleep. It's the phones that are really distracting.
You can hear the rest of this conversation with host Melanie Cole on the Healthy Children podcast, wherever you listen to your other podcasts. This has been Radio MD's COVID-19 Weekly. Contact us with questions or give us some feedback at COVID-19@radiomd.com. I'm Caitlin White. Stay safe, stay warm, and stay 6 feet apart.